Coffee House Shots is sponsored by EDF, Britain's biggest generator of zero carbon electricity. Find out how we are busy helping Britain achieve net zero at www.edfenergy.com.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. The Health Secretary Sajid Javid joined Nick Robinson on the MAR programme this morning. Robinson began the interview by looking ahead to Christmas, asking Javid if this year's festive season was likely to end up being anything like the last.
Is the winter we're looking at going to be like last winter? Or are you hopeful it will feel quite a lot better than that?
I'm hopeful, of course, but we need to prepare for it because COVID and other viruses, they like the autumn and they like the winter. And that's why later this week, the Prime Minister will be setting out our plans to manage COVID and other health threats during the winter. And what we'll make clear is that our first line of defence remains the vaccine programme, has been enormously successful. Over 80% of over 16s have had their double jabs. Far more have had at least one jab. And that remains vital. We still want people to come forward. So if there's anyone listening that still hasn't had their jab, please do come forward. Those jabs are working. But alongside that, we've got this testing infrastructure, this huge sort of juggernaut of a machine providing tests up and down the country. We've got new treatments that we didn't have in the last winter. And we've got a surveillance system that's the envy of the world. So all of this is working together to protect us.
Let's just stick with where you think we are now. There are reasons for being a bit more optimistic. We get Christmas this year, do we?
Yeah, of course we get Christmas.
We get Christmas. Yeah. We don't get lockdowns.
I'm not anticipating any more lockdowns. I think it'd be irresponsible for any health minister around the world to take everything off the table. But I just don't see how we get to another lockdown.
Last week, the vaccines minister Nadeem Zahawi appeared to confirm plans to introduce vaccine passports. A difficult vote for the government had been anticipated towards the end of September. But today, Javid was singing from a very different hymn sheet.
Can you clear this up on vaccine passports? It is only 2 days ago that Nadeem Zahawi, the vaccine minister, says that he didn't like vaccine passports, but it is the right thing to do. Has it overnight become the wrong thing to do?
There's no overnight about it. I mean, first of all, there's a lot of defences, as we've just gone through some of them, that we need to keep in place because this virus hasn't gone anywhere. There's still a pandemic, so of course we need to remain cautious. But we just shouldn't be doing things for the sake of it or because others are doing it. We should look at every possible intervention properly. So you asked about vaccine passports. So I think it's fair to say, I think most people probably instinctively don't like the idea. I mean, I've never liked the idea of saying to people, you must show your papers or something to do what is just an everyday activity. But we were right to properly look at it, to look at the evidence.
But you're not doing it.
Well, what I can say is that we've looked at it properly. And whilst we should keep it in reserve as a potential option, I'm pleased to say that we will not be going ahead with plans for vaccine passports.
Trevor Phillips also interviewed Javid, who suggested that he was working to scrap one particularly unpopular and costly aspect of travelling abroad.
When it comes to travel, for example, there are some rules that are going to have to remain in place. But the PCR test that's required upon your return to UK from certain countries, look, I want to try and get rid of that as soon as I possibly can. I'm not going to make that decision right now, but I've already asked officials that the moment we can, let's get rid of these kind of intrusions, the cost that generates for families, particularly families just trying to go out on holiday. We shouldn't be keeping anything like that in place for a second longer than is absolutely necessary.
Philip sought a direct response from Javid to the government's approach to universal credit. The benefit was raised by £20 a week as a response to the pandemic, but it is due to end on October the 6th. However, opposition parties have called for the uplift to be made permanent.
A quick question on universal credit, and you can do this in yes or no. Are you going to cut universal credit by £20 a week?
We're going to end the temporary increase in universal credit.
So the answer, yes, that cut, you're not budging on that at all.
The increase, which was temporary, will be ended as planned at the end of this month.
Phillips went on to speak to the Shadow Health Secretary, Jonathan Ashworth, who attacked the government's new plans to increase taxes in order to pay for health and social care.
But our problem with what has been announced this week is that it is a punishing unfair tax rise that won't deliver the healthcare that is needed. We won't see people treated within 18 weeks again, like they were under the last Labour government. And it certainly doesn't fix social care. The cap, yes, it limits the liabilities that some people will pay out, but only benefits 1 in 7 people. What about the other 6 in 7 who see no benefit? You'll still have to pay top-up charges and fees, so you're still at risk of losing your house, so it fails on its own terms. In the small print, it suggests that because of the way the financing works, council tax will go up, or care homes will go bust, and there will still be thousands upon thousands of people in this country who don't get access to the social care they need.
Robinson asked Ashworth for some details on Labour's alternative to the government's plans for social care.
Let me tell you what we need to do, because our social care system is broken. It's bust. There'll be viewers today whose mother or father perhaps has got dementia, who have to battle with a complex bureaucratic system to try and get them care. And often the care is turned down, not because the local council is callous, but because it doesn't have the money. There'll be adults with autism and learning disabilities locked in the most appalling barbaric of conditions. It's like something from the Victorian age. This system does nothing for them. We would put more investment in so people can stay in their home.
More investment? How is the question
I'll tell you, endlessly asking and not getting answers. We would expand access. We would raise quality because so many care providers are rated inadequate by the CQC. And if you invest so that people can stay in their home longer, not be forced into a home, or not be forced into a hospital bed with nowhere to go, you can release savings. The IPPR has said you could release £2.5 billion worth of savings, which that we would reallocate to the front line.
So Labour is not saying it'll repeal the tax, is saying you'll have more tax on the wealthy, and saying you can save money if you reform.
I'm saying we will have a reform programme to rebuild our broken care services so that we have national care services that allow people to stay in the home longer, that raise quality, so we don't have these dehumanising flying 15-minute visits, so by paying staff properly as well, a national living wage.
Okay.
And those people trapped in these awful conditions, with adults with learning disabilities, we should care for those in their homes in the community.
This is the first time we've heard this
proposal. And that will save money as well.
Phillips interviewed Scotland's First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, and asked her about her ambition to hold a new independence referendum in 2023.
You said in your speech that you want to have a further independence referendum by 2023, COVID permitting. Can we just deal with the narrow question of timing and COVID? What does that actually mean? What level of infection or hospitalisation would make a referendum impossible, given that you've just had elections in Scotland in the middle of a lockdown?
Well, we just had elections, and of course, and just before so that I don't miss this point, the SNP won that election on a commitment to an independence referendum with a historic share of the vote. Our constituency share of the vote was higher than any party has achieved in the entire lifetime of the Scottish Parliament. So it's probably a point of context that might be important for our discussion.
Yeah, okay, what about COVID would stop you having a referendum?
You've made the comparison with the election. This is not just about safety of polling stations. It's about making sure that as the country faces a big, important decision about its future, it's able to focus on that properly and that it doesn't have looming over that a COVID crisis. So right now, you started this interview rightly about talking about the recent spike in cases in Scotland, putting enormous pressure on our National Health Service, leading me as the First Minister to continue to advise people to take great care about their interactions. I don't think that kind of situation would be the best backdrop to the country considering and making a decision on its future. I'm not going to set a precise level of infections, but you would want to see the COVID situation under control, the pressure on our National Health Service significantly lower than it is right now, a sense that we weren't still in the acute phase of this crisis, but also crucially, and I think this is crucial, a sort of overall environment in the country where people are not in their day-to-day lives being asked to, even if not comply with legal restrictions, still limit or restrict their own day-to-day behaviour. Ultimately, of course, as with many things in the life of governments, it will be a matter of judgment, and it's important that I get that judgment right, because I'm very, very serious and have been for 18 months when I say the biggest responsibility, the most serious responsibility on my shoulders is steering the country through the biggest health crisis in a century.
And finally, Sturgeon defended the Scottish Government's Gender Recognition Reform Bill against criticism that this could impact services and spaces intended for women only.
Do you agree with the most famous Scottish-based writer J.K. Rowling that there is a biological basis to sex and that you, for example, are a woman, not a person with a womb, but a woman?
I am a woman, and yes, I do think there is a biological aspect to sex. I'm not going to simplify this by sort of saying, do I agree or disagree with J.K. Rowling? There's many things I agree with her on. I'm sure on some of the nuances of this, we might take a different opinion. But let me, you know, address directly the issue of the gender recognition reform bill, something that's happened already in many other countries, Ireland included. This is about making it easier for trans people, they can go through this process already, but it's about making it less degrading and traumatic for trans people to legally change gender. It does not in any way, shape or form remove the legal protections that women have, and that's important to me as a feminist. But trans people are amongst the most stigmatised minorities in our society, and we should try to reduce that if we can.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffeehouse Shots podcast on the iTunes store. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily evening blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/eveningblend. Thanks for listening, and do join us again next week.